Stationsover. Just means I don't use a bell. When I was in, first a monk in Thailand, they used to ring the bell for beginning the mealtime. Once we've done the mealtime, it goes ding. One time in the afternoon, we were doing the chores and somebody moved the bell just like that. And it went ding. And immediately, the saliva came into my mouth. And it's conditions. Okay, so we've come here to do a bit of meditation for this afternoon. So before we begin the meditation, I'd like to just talk a little bit about our approach to meditation. And what I'd like to talk about this afternoon, I remember when, for those of you who don't know, before I was a monk, I was a musician, a guitar player, and if you've ever hung around with guitar players a lot, you know that sometimes guitar players can tend to be very, very kind of focused on technique and things like that. And I remember one of my friends has recommended a book to me. He said, "This, you know, it's a really interesting book about playing guitar, but it wasn't about the technique of playing guitar. It was about it was like on the subjective side. It was about how to feel about it, about how to be as a guitar player." And so this afternoon I'd like to just say a few words are kind of inspired by that idea, because sometimes, you know, we can pay a lot of attention to meditation methods and things like that, but more important is our attitude to meditation. So as somebody who's a meditator, you have to be ready for a life of strangeness. You have to be ready to say, "I'm going to set aside being normal. I'm going to give up my dreams of fitting in." And you're going to have to get used to sort of exercising those muscles that go against the stream of the world. And the stream of the world, of course, seems to flow faster and faster every year, sometimes every day almost. Whether it in fact is flowing faster is another matter, but certainly seems to be. And so any time we want to meditate, we have to make the choice to let all of those things go. And every single person who's in this room today has made that choice. There's always 101 other things that you could be doing apart from being here and sitting meditation this afternoon. So every time we make that kind of choice, we have to let go of all of those possible futures. I don't know if you're familiar with the many worlds interpretation of quantum theory. Every time that there's a branch, any time that there's a choice, then there are multiple worlds pop up into existence. If you like, you can think about it like this. When you come, you sit to meditate. All of these voices you can hear in your head. All of those voices are like the echoes from all of those possible futures. All of the what-ifs, all of the perhapses, all of the maybes. All of those things that you might have done, the choices that could have been made, the doubts, the worries, they're kind of echoing around in your head. And so for that period of meditation, at least, we make the choice to be antisocial. We make the choice to say no. We make the choice to give up on all of those other things that are so demanding of our time and our attention. And even though we live in a world which tells us buy, consume, have, want, then you make that choice to say, I don't really want to have anything. I don't really want anything. I don't want to be anything. At least for this little while. And so this is this kind of attitude that we have as a meditator. And there's something about the meditation which we know really in our hearts, there's something about it which is very real. It's more real than anything else. We come in touch with who we are. We come in touch with our own minds. We come in touch with the truth at a level that we can't really express or talk about or explain. And in a way that's very hard to convey to anybody who's not a meditator. When I first came off my first meditation retreat, I always remember that experience. I was in Chiang Mai, went back to a guest house I was staying in, and I was just sitting there and listening to the conversations that people were having in the guest house, all these different things they wanted to do, go to a nightclub or go trekking or go to this shop or that shop. It wasn't that I wasn't thinking there was anything kind of wrong with the thoughts. It wasn't that I was thinking that, oh, these thoughts are trivial or that they're meaningless or something like that. That wasn't the point. The point was that there was something unreflective about them. It's just the thoughts came and the words came without any sense of there being an awareness of what is going on. I felt this kind of sense of difference, of distance. And you get used to that after a while, but there's still some kind of sense in which you think that ability to reflect and to see more deeply, it does create a distance sometimes. I don't know, many people have spoken to me about this. You know, they're at work or something like that, maybe in the family, and I feel like there's no one they can talk to about their experiences. And this is part of the reality. It's something we have to expect as meditators, especially as we go deeper into meditation. We are expanding our consciousness. We are going into worlds that most people don't have any conception of. And I guess some of you probably had the experience of trying to convey that, you know, being really excited, coming back from your retreat and telling everybody how wonderful it was. And they're like, oh yeah, and I saw this really good show on telly the other night too. And so is that kind of different distance, a kind of sense of alienation which can come. And so this is something which makes life, you know, it's not an easy thing to be able to accept. It's something we have to deal with. And so it's important that because this is happening, and while this is happening, it's important we also have that sense of compassion. Because being different doesn't mean that you're better. It doesn't mean that you're above anybody else. It doesn't mean that you don't feel for them. It doesn't mean that you don't care. So we have to, it's important that in part of our practice that we develop this emotional side, this sense of connection, this sense of compassion, this sense of love. And if we're lacking that, then it's very easy to get drawn into these kind of traps of the spiritual path, which are very common. Sometimes in the psychologists call it spiritual bypassing, where you have certain problems and issues and so on, and then you use your meditation to just sort of ignore those problems, and that you think you're, you know, enlightened or very evolved or something like that. And really you're just refusing to face up to issues, refusing to talk to people, refusing to care about other people. So this is why this emotional part and this metta and compassion and so on, it's always is an absolutely crucial part of developing meditation. So when, you know, if we're bearing this in mind, then when we come to meditate, each time we sit to meditate, then we have to have that feeling. You know, on the one hand we have to have that feeling that we're stepping outside, we're going against the stream of the world, we're going into retreat. You're sitting under the Bodhi tree, you're leaving the palace, leaving your house. Everything has to be let go of and dropped away. At the same time, each time you come out of the meditation, then you also have to feel this sense of entry, this re-entry back into the world. A reconnection, a re-caring. And so that as somebody who's a practitioner of meditation, somebody who cares about expanding consciousness and deepening their understanding and deepening their awareness, that you become somebody who manifests that in a meaningful way around them. So this is just some thoughts for you this afternoon on the attitudes to meditation. And now will come time, we'll do some meditation. I'm just thinking, should we do a guided meditation or unguided meditation? What do you prefer? Guided meditation? Unguided meditation? What do you reckon? Guided has it? Sorry? Okay, so it's going to be guided meditation. So if it's going to be a guided meditation, what kind of meditation is it going to be? Three choices. Metta, breath meditation. We did metta last night. Should we do it again? Oh, left, never mind. We'll do it again. Metta, breath meditation. And the third choice for today will be meditation on... the four elements. Okay, they're your choices. Who wants metta meditation? Okay, a few. Who wants breath? Is that metta? Okay, breath meditation. A few. Four elements meditation. See, you guys, you just you just want something new, right? You haven't done that one before. Junkies for experience. Okay, we'll do four elements meditation. I'll just say a very few words about it before we begin the guided meditation. But the four elements are ways of considering the material world in ancient Indian thought, correspond to the Western categories of solid, liquid, gas, and heat. And meditation on them is essentially a meditation on those different physical properties that we experience. And so it actually is one of the meditations which is found most commonly in the early Buddhist texts and is treated in, I think, more detail than just about any other meditation in the Visuddhimagga, the traditional Theravadan meditation manual, and also taught very often in contemporary Theravada meditation circles. There are many different approaches to this particular meditation, and even within the suttas there are many different ways of doing this particular meditation. So I'm just going to be introducing one approach to it, which is an approach that was taught to me by my teacher Ajahn Mahachatchai many years ago. So we'll try it out for today. And because it is a new meditation, and because for most of us, you're trying something different, don't expect too much. We just sort of give it a go and see what happens. All right, so let's begin. So we sit quietly. And letting your mind gently settle back inside your body. Noticing the feelings, the sensations in the different parts of the body, starting with the most obvious ones, the pressure of your seat, any touch of the cloth on your skin, pains, energies, tensions, vibrations, movements inside your body. And keeping your mind focused inside your own body, we begin by investigating first of all the earth element. So this earth element is anything that you can experience that has that quality of hardness inside your own body. Begin with the most obvious things. Your teeth. Feel the hardness of your teeth in your mouth. You're not looking for the individual shapes of the teeth or anything like that, but for that quality of hardness. And in other places in your body as well, in your nails, in your bones. So scan around your body and just check all those different parts and see that element of hardness there. Keeping your body erect, giving you shape. And then notice when you have a clear idea of the hardness inside your own body, look for the same element outside your body. You can feel it when you're sitting. You can feel the hardness of the ground pressing against you. Sometimes a bit painful. Pushes so hard against you. And as we're sitting here, that earth, a great earth that extends all around us, supporting us, giving us life. We use our imagination to spread out from our body. Think of the hardness all around us in the buildings. the trees, the roads, cars. Other people. And then bring those two aspects together, the hardness internally and the hardness externally. You see, actually, there's no difference. The earth element inside yourself, the earth element out there in the world. It's just earth element. The quality of hardness is no different. You can feel this, like this continuity of the earth element. And you realize that which we attach to, that which we claim to be I and mine, it's just earth element. And we move to the water element. Once again, starting inside your own body and starting with the most obvious, with the saliva you can feel inside your own mouth. And you can feel that water element has a very different kind of quality to the earth element. It's very soft, flowing. It has a quality of binding, of sticking things together. If you take the water element out of a body, then it crumbles away and blows away in the wind, becomes dust. And when you have a clear idea in your mind of that water element in your own mouth, then scan your mind slowly and carefully through your different parts of your body, just becoming aware of the different kinds of water element, all the different kinds of fluids, and blood moving through your veins. Different kinds of liquids in different organs, your brain floating in fluid. Indeed, each cell in your body is full of liquid. Move your mind through these different parts of the body and just become aware as best you can of what it's like to feel these different aspects of the water element. When you have a clear idea of that experience of water element inside your own body, then consider the water element outside. And just in this room, you think of the people around us, all of them full of water. The glasses and bottles of water that we have. Outside, the plants, animals, pipes, clouds in the sky. The river, lakes, water flowing through the earth underground. And of course the great ocean. You get this feel for this web, these interconnected flowing cycles moving through and around this great earth, evaporating, condensing, raining, coming to the earth and being channeled and diverted in all kinds of ways, and then eventually going back to the oceans. Constantly moving cycle that makes all life possible. And we're just one short stage on that journey. The water element in our own bodies is constantly flowing through us, coming in when we drink, going out when we urinate or sweat. And just as with the earth element, we realize that this water element, it doesn't belong to us. It's just the water element, that's all. All of this is impermanent. It's conditions, just moving, flowing and changing. Next we can consider the air element. Inside your own body, once more consider the air element you experience inside your mouth. Or moving through your nostrils. Normally the air element has a very soft quality, very almost intangible. We usually only notice it when it's in motion. In addition to those air elements moving through your body, also consider the different energies, motions, vibrations inside your body. Each time you breathe, you can feel like a wave of energy swelling through your whole body. And consider that air element externally. Maybe you can feel a soft breeze or movement on your skin. Sounds we can hear around us, carried through the air. A gentle breeze outside, moving the leaves back and forwards. And out into the atmosphere, swirling, changing, cycling, moving, drifting. That ceaseless motion. Of this blanket of air that enshrouds the whole earth. And you can feel that air element at the boundaries between oneself and the world outside, especially at the breath. Constantly the air inside ourselves becomes the air outside. The air outside becomes the air inside. There's no difference between them, it's just the air element. And then moving to the heat element. The fire element is the element of transformation. Of change, shifting from one to the other, from solid to liquid, liquid to the air and back again. All because of the heat, the energy. We can feel that heat inside our own bodies. Usually our body is quite warm. It has a soft warmness to it, which is quite uniform. Normally we don't notice it very much. But we do notice it very much when something different happens. When you feel cold or hot, touch something cold or hot. You notice it very strongly. So even now as you're sitting, you can probably feel some parts of the body a little bit cooler, some a little bit warmer. Maybe in your belly is a bit warm, a bit hot there. And your extremities a bit cooler. outside. You consider the fire element outside us. The sun in the sky, blazing away. The warmth that comes from being in the sunlight. The cool of the shade. And the heat from all the fires. Whether it's a cooking stove, or a heating fire, or a bonfire, or a bushfire. And then the heat in all of the machines, car engines, factories. All of the devices and appliances we use, all of them generating heat. And then the absence of heat inside the fridge, the cold places, in the poles, on the top of mountains, bottom of the ocean. And just as our own body has its temperature and its variations and the movement of energy from one place to the other, and so too in this world outside us, it has its own temperature, but that temperature varies from place to place and it's always moving and shifting, finding a new balance. Now we're coming near the end of the meditation. Just come back into your body. Be in peace. And before we finish, taking a minute to reflect back over the meditation, inquiring into cause and effect. What was going on? What happened? What changed? How did those elements feel? Could you experience them clearly or not? Was it just hard to get an idea of them? What was it like experiencing them inside and outside? And how does your mind feel now compared to how it was at the start of the meditation? Finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize awakening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. You can gradually open your eyes and come out of meditation. Okay, very good. So, might have some questions on the iPad first, and then we'll see if there's any questions here. Thank you so much. Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Okay, yeah, just for people to know that for this session, the questions should be on meditation. We've had a few sort of more random questions coming in. Okay, so number one question here. So can you give an outline of how you contemplate on a certain subject during meditation, for example, starting from getting into sitting posture, relaxing the body, etc.? Ah, well, I mean, that's pretty much just what we do when we do the guided meditations. So when I do guided meditations, I pretty much just sort of go through the process as I do it. But basically, the first thing is that important to have a time and a place for meditation. Secondly, to have a good posture, make sure that you're comfortable in your sitting posture. And then to determine, to be clear in your mind about what you're going to be meditating on. And then usually for a few minutes at the beginning of the meditation to just begin by just mindful awareness, to just be aware of what's going on, just relax, settle back, just know everything. And when you feel comfortable and relaxed and ready, then you begin with your actual meditation. So usually you should have a clear idea of what the meditation is. You might do different meditations at different times, but be clearly aware in your mind, you know, now I'm going to do breath meditation, now I'm going to do loving kindness, whatever it is, so you don't get confused during the practice. And then then you develop it using whatever meditation method or approach that you're using. But just remember that don't get hung up on the details of the method. It's not about the method, it's about the experience. And then finally, when we finish meditation, to come out of meditation gradually and mindfully. Don't just sort of think, oh, I've had enough, and get up and go off and do things, but gradually come out. Let your mind come back into the senses. Review the meditation. Always just check over it for a minute or two. Just check what happened and how it went. And then finally, go back to what you're doing in your life. Okay, so that's pretty much how I do the meditation. Second question that's got here is during meditation. Sometimes during meditation, I do an inner dialogue with other people. For example, caused by anger or another emotion. How do I deal with this? Well, of course, this is very common, isn't it? That we sit there and we're talking to somebody else in the meditation, and it's all kind of we rarely reflect on how weird it is. Okay, that he's sitting there talking to somebody else, and it's funny how you always win the arguments when they're not there. I don't know why that is. When the other person's there, it's like
You know, it's as if they don't understand your points. But when you're just by yourself, you explain, your logic is always flawless and impeccable, and you always win the argument. And, you know, it's so satisfying that you can do it again and again and again, having the same argument and winning it every time. Yeah? And yet somehow, it's not solved. So the most important thing to understand there is that the other person isn't really there. It's just you. And so what you're having an argument with is just a part of yourself. Okay? You're arguing, you're sitting there arguing with yourself, which is frankly a bit dumb. Okay? It's a bit dumb. When what we think of as that other person, or what appears to us as that other person, of course, is just a perception, and it's perception which is made partly out of memories of that other person, but also out of a lot of our own ideas and thoughts and feelings and so on and so forth, which we add to and layer to it. You know, so the amount of that other person which is actually there is only a tiny fraction of who that person really is. Right? So you have a tiny, tiny, tiny bit that relates to actually who that person is, and a lot which we've added onto it, on top of it ourselves. And so we have these kind of arguments. So if we step back and we try to understand what's happening, one way that we can look at it is that having these arguments and so on, in one way is trying to negotiate or understand our own position in relation to that other person. Right? What would we have said? What could we say? What might we say? What might they think? And so you're sort of trying to work out how to think about and how to relate to that other person. Okay, but the problem is, of course, that voice in your head isn't really that other person. It's really just a part of yourself. And when you realize that it's a part of yourself, you can begin to have some compassion for it. You begin to realize it's just your own suffering. It's your own tension. It's your own misunderstanding. And so you have some compassion for it. Rather than arguing with it, you have some compassion. And when you start to have that compassion for that voice of the other inside your own head, you are opening the gateway for having compassion for that person. And it's kind of awkward sometimes, isn't it? If you're sitting there, right? Imagine that you had some encounter with somebody during the day, okay? You go away, and then you think about that person again and again and again and again, and you're having that argument and so on and so forth. And then you meet that person the next day, right? It's kind of weird, isn't it, right? Because you've been going over in your head so many times what a completely awful person they are. They didn't even notice you, okay? In many cases. I mean, maybe not. That might not be true, but often it is. They've got no idea that you've been sitting there going over about them in your head, right? And they'd be surprised and shocked and a bit weirded out by the fact that you've been thinking about them all this time. Right? And so we do all this kind of stuff. We go over it and over it. But if instead of having those angry thoughts and hateful thoughts towards that person, if you had kind and compassionate thoughts, then that opens that opportunity that next time you meet them or see them or have something to do with them, that you can extend that compassion to them as well. So this is really the key to that, to overcoming that kind of thought. And finally, just one more. Okay, so this is a question: is there a different type of meditation which is used other than focusing on the breath to awaken the kundalini energy? Can you give me brief explanations on techniques needed to awaken kundalini? Okay, well, kundalini energy is really, it's not a kind of way that we think about meditation in Buddhist meditation circles, so I'm not really an expert on the subject. If you're interested in that approach to meditation, then that's usually taught within the yoga circles. So I'd recommend finding a teacher from that tradition who kind of knew about that. Generally speaking, what they're talking about when they're talking about kundalini, of course, is basically just the energies that you experience in your body. And those energies are experienced, it doesn't matter what kind of meditation that you're doing. And the idea is that we have our energies tend to focus around the coarser aspects of life.
and through meditation that we can refine those and make them more, bring them into a sort of a state of higher consciousness. So really any kind of meditation will do that. You know, as I said, we don't really use that framework of Kundalini to talk about it, but basically any kind of meditation will let us work with those more base or unwholesome or afflictive kinds of emotions and feelings and energies, and help us to transform them and raise them to a higher state. So really any kind of meditation. But if you want something more specific on that, I'd recommend finding a good teacher of yogic meditation. Okay, so it's 15:15, so maybe time to finish up. Oh, sorry, Wayne, you had a question? Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. If you could repeat for the microphone.
That's okay. With the four element meditation, I was just wondering how you recommend it to help you on the path. So whether it's like with bones giving you a nimitta, or realizing non-self through just being the four elements for the body, or or whatever like that.
Okay, so it's a good question, and it's treated both in the suttas and in the later tradition with Suttamaga in very flexible ways, and taught in so many different approaches. It's actually quite fascinating. So in some cases, you know, if you consider it in terms of, say, samatha and vipassana, right, tranquility and insight, it's used in both of those kind of contexts. So we find treatments of that meditation which are used so you can actually absorb into that experience of the four elements, and you get a nimitta of those and then have an experience of samadhi. But also you can use it for reflection onto not-self and impermanence and things like that. There's some wonderful suttas, very powerful suttas in the Majjhima Nikaya, where it talks about how, you know, even this external water element, like the oceans, are impermanent, and talks about how even all of the oceans can dry up and all of the water can vanish from them. And so there's definitely that kind of idea of impermanence and not-self and so on, which is there. And that idea which I introduced in that meditation today, the internal-external, this is something which is you find all the way through in the suttas. It's one of the most common perspectives to bring to meditation, is to look at what's in here and what's out there. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, it says, you know, just as, you know, what's in my body and what's out there is of the same nature, it's of the same Dhamma. And so you're breaking down that sense of difference between self and other. So it's really kind of about not self, ultimately, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
But, you know, you can perform a lot of... it also can perform a lot of more basic functions, because through element meditation you're getting more grounded in your body. So it can help with a lot of things like sort of energy imbalances and so on in your body. And that in the Tibetan traditions they use it a lot for different healing practices and things like that. Sometimes, for example, you find that people on the spiritual path will tend to be too airy. Right? You sort of... up in the clouds and floating around with the fairies and the angels and stuff like that. And so if you see someone like that, then it's good to sort of really get into the earth element, right? And you can sort of really sort of... Sometimes when I see people who are really extreme like that, I actually tell them to go down to the beach and like bury yourself in the sand up to your neck, and just sort of just really feel the earth element, you know, and sort of let all of that agitating energy just sort of literally ground the energy out into the earth, yeah. I don't know if anyone has done it yet, but I think it's a good idea. So it's just that idea that you can use, sometimes you can use those elements to sort of find a balance if you're, you know, if you're imbalanced in some way. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
So let's finish by paying respects.